we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October the 26th, 2018. I am your host, and I am joined here today by my vegan co-host, Jen.
Hello.
Today's show is themed for World Vegan Day, which is happening soon on November the 1st. This show is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. Now on to today's show. We have a wonderful feature interview lined up for you that will be airing in about 18 minutes. For World Vegan Day, I wanted to interview vegan world record-breaking endurance athlete and animal rescuer Fiona Oakes, because she exemplifies for me how you can live your life compassionately, healthily, and fully, and use your skills as a platform to raise awareness for the animals. A film by Cowspiracy and What the Health filmmaker Keegan Kuhn called Running for Good has just come out, and it profiles Fiona throughout a week-long ultra-marathon called the Marathon des Sables, known as the toughest foot race on Earth and based in the deserts of North Africa. I highly recommend watching this film. It's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. In today's interview, Fiona will share for us many aspects of her veganism and why she runs for the animals. Happy World Vegan Day to you, Jen.
Happy World Vegan Day.
And to all of our listeners. So if you didn't know, November 1st is World Vegan Day. Did you also know that the whole month of November is also named World Vegan Month?
I actually didn't know that.
Now you do. So World Vegan Day and World Vegan Month in November were started as a time to recognize how far the vegan movement has come, to highlight how accessible and beneficial a vegan lifestyle can be, and to encourage the vegan curious to adopt veganism by sharing advice, recipes, and ideas. So pretty much it's always World Vegan Day and Month here at Animal Voices Radio, right? Mm-hmm. So this November also marks my 9th anniversary of working here at Vancouver Co-op Radio as a host and producer for the Animal Voices show. And I can share how I've seen society changing in the past decade, and in fact, in the past 25 years when my vegan journey began. Back then in 1993, I remember I didn't want to drink cow's milk, and so the only plant-based milks in the store, basically the Chinese soy milks that I used to buy in 4-liter jugs, they had a very beany taste to them. And that's, you know, I just was doing it for the animals. I didn't want to support dairy. There were virtually no vegan cheeses. The only one I could find had casein in it, an animal protein. But now, like, look what we have, right? Yeah. And our meat alternatives were limited to Eve's veggie products. I thank Eve's for starting that movement, but in, you know, alternative plant-based products. But now, like, look at what we have. So mm-hmm. I think that things have changed even in the past, like, 5 years, even 2 years, in terms of how many of these products are available in the store. And we even have our own fully vegan store, Vegan Supply, here in Vancouver, which is amazing. And there's also the rise of the clean meat industry, which is cell cultured meat. And I was listening to a podcast about it this week. And did you know there's now over 50 companies working globally on technologies to replace animal products such as meat, eggs, and leather with cell cultures?
Fantastic.
It's amazing. That's something that's going to, it's going to take over the world soon. So I do have to say that I'm also seeing a great emergence and a steep surge of animal activism, not only in Vancouver, but around the world, with groups like the Save Movement, Direct Action Everywhere, and Anonymous for the Voiceless active in chapters worldwide and getting together in their locations frequently to change hearts and minds and to try to make a difference. In Vancouver alone, we seem to just have way more activists than 20 years ago when I was doing this. And even in the past 2 years, who are converging together to speak up for the animals like we do here on Animal Voices. So Jen, your vegan journey started a few years ago, but you are now one of the very foremost vegan activists who I know. What does your veganism mean for you, and why do you speak up for the animals every single day, including here as a producer and host on Animal Voices?
Once you've opened your eyes to what happens to animals, which happened for me, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, I watched the Earthlings documentary, which shows undercover footage taken in all kinds of industries that exploit and kill animals, such as factory farming, training elephants in the circus, the leather industry, the fur industry. When you see a film like that and you spend a whole 95 minutes bawling your eyes out, you feel compelled to take action. I think most of us would feel that way. And so that is what drives me. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't have those images in my head when I see somebody eating a hamburger, wearing a Canada Goose jacket. I have nightmares about animal rights issues every single night. I have to keep taking action for them. I feel so guilty for all the years of my life that I contributed to their deaths. I couldn't even imagine how many animals have died and suffered for me. And for their entire lives, they suffered. From birth until death, they didn't have a good day.
Right. And you know, when it really comes down to it, we are all earthlings, right? So why can't we have compassion for our non-human fellow beings? I am driven by the compassion that I have in my heart for pure and innocent, beautiful beings who don't want to be exploited for the food industry, for clothing, for entertainment, nor for experimentation. Non-human animals just like us have a deep desire to live, and we have no right to take that from them, just as we don't from human beings. And if we probe and tear off the layers that have been bound around our hearts over a lifetime of being told that it's okay to use, torture, and kill animals, well, you know, I think that people are starting to wake up to the message of refining our compassion and living lives that are in alignment with our ethics. It's extremely important, I think, to speak up for what you believe in, especially when you see injustices against others occurring. And we have to find our voices to do that. And that's why I've been here for 9 years at Animal Voices, and will continue to educate and speak up for animals for as long as I live. But while the vegan movement is growing, billions of animals are still needlessly suffering and killed every year. And Jen, I wonder if you can speak on your observations of how the mainstream media still has a role in supporting animal exploitation by not always telling the full story.
Yeah, it is a frustration of mine. I've been at events where I'm taking part in letting the media know or the public know about what's going on for animals. And you know, an example could be at the Vancouver Aquarium, where the media occasionally does show up to interview activists about their side of the story. And then due to time constraints or biases, I can't really say what gets put up on the news that night is quite different from the interview that was given. And mm-hmm. I do understand that they only have a short segment for each news story. And of course, these poor journalists that show up to do an interview have a tough job of coming to any random event and having to have quickly accessible the knowledge and the background to be able to ask the right questions. So I'm not blaming them. But I just want to say that when it comes to what information you're often getting on mainstream media in regards to really important things like this, it's important to do your own research as well. And this is why I like CFRO Co-op Radio, because here on Animal Voices, once a week, we have an hour show. We often try to fit in 2 interviews with experts in the field of animal rights or environmentalism. And we are able to give them enough time to get the full message out, as well as a call to action to put a positive spin on it and get people involved in helping.
Exactly. Thank you for that. So veganism is slowly getting into the mainstream. I have a vegan Google alerts that comes to me every day. And so every single day I'm seeing all the new stories that are coming out on veganism. But still, you know, it's not really there yet. Only 2.3% of Canadians identify as vegan, as told by a survey that was done earlier this year. The tipping point for societal change is 11%. So we still have some ways to go. So what is one way that you can support achieving a world where animal cruelty is a distant memory and people are living healthy and compassionate lives without harming others? how about supporting us at Animal Voices and here in Co-op Radio? Do you think that's a good idea,
Jen?
You
could do that for $5 a month. We would take anything you have. That would be very helpful.
Yeah, so that brings us to, this is now week two of the Vancouver Co-op Radio Fall Member Drive, which goes until October the 29th. Animal Voices, in case you didn't know, it's a public affairs show that reports on animal advocacy issues and the vegan lifestyle. Our show is heard live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. PST at 100.5 FM in Vancouver and at cooperadio.org. Every week, we cover a wide range of animal advocacy issues affecting humans and animals in the local community and in the world today, and we promote and educate on the vegan lifestyle. The podcasts are then posted at animalvoices.org and on iTunes. Each podcast has the potential to reach millions of people globally, and we can get that message out there if you help us by sharing our podcasts. Vancouver Co-op Radio is an all-volunteer-run registered charity. That's right. Jen and I and the rest of us here at Animal Voices, we don't get paid to do this. We're doing this because we're compelled to, you know, activism is my rent for living on the planet, right? So
exactly.
That's my mantra, and that's why I'm compelled to be here every week. So, yeah, we're listener-sponsored, and that means that we need your help to keep the show on the air. Now is the time to show your support. As Jen said, it can be as little as $5 a month, which is what I have taken out of my bank account every month, and then I receive a charitable tax receipt at the end of the year. As I said, we are a registered charity. We do encourage you to do like a monthly sustaining membership if you can, because that just gives us more time to work on the show and to not have to worry about if money's coming in. So we do ask that you do that. And you can donate by phoning right now, 604-684-8494. Brian is in the office to answer the phone. Once again, that's 604-684-8494. You can also go to cooperadio.org. That's the station's website, and click on donate on the top right-hand corner of the webpage. And remember to indicate Animal Voices as your chosen program to support. Please make a donation now to support Animal Voices and World Vegan Day. We are so grateful for your support. We thank you in advance. Any final words you want to say, Jen?
I am someone who always listens to talk radio when it's on in the car, no matter what it is. I love learning, and CFRO almost always has something on that I am just so fascinated by. So, yeah, please help us out.
You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 CFRO. We are a non-commercial station bringing you voices and stories and perspectives you probably won't hear elsewhere. We are supported by members and by donations. You can become a member by going to our website at www.cooperadio.org. If you like what you hear but don't want to be a member, that's cool too. You can still help by clicking on the donate arrow at the top right of the website. Co-op Radio thanks you for listening and for helping build our community of listeners and programmers.
You know I need your love. You got that hold over me. As long as I got your love, you know that I'm
So we have some events to announce for you. Lots of events coming up as usual. The one that I wanted to highlight is Dog Wab 5, which is happening on November the 11th. This is the Day of Giving Within Arbitrary Borders, which was started last year on Canada Day by local activist and vegan David Isbister, who makes the most delicious vegan food. Please note that the date has changed. It was previously set for November the 4th. It is now going to be on November the 11th. So what this is a day where caring people will converge together for a weekend and make amazing, delicious, warm, hot food to give out on the streets in the downtown east side here in Vancouver, right close to where Co-op Radio is located, actually. And we are planning to make at least 300 meals to people in need. And we also give out, we set up like a pop-up store where everything that we're giving out is free. So many personal items and toiletries and socks, reusable water bottles. If you have any of these items to donate, please check out the Facebook event. And it's posted on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. You can donate cash as well. We need cash to buy food ingredients. And you can just come out and help. So please go on there and help. This event is inclusive, intersectional, and it's intention and not designed to be anything else other than pure giving, interaction, and showing love to those who we serve.
I love that. There's an exciting event happening at UBC at 4 o'clock today. Join animal rights activists at the Student Nest to educate the public about the horrific production of Canada goose jackets. Coyotes are trapped in the wild in painful leg hold traps, often chewing off their own feet to escape, or left out in the cold with no access to food, shelter, or water for days until hunters come to kill them. The coats are then filled with feathers of tortured birds. These jackets are very popular in Vancouver, and activists are concerned that the upcoming grand opening of a flagship store at Pacific Center will cause even more suffering for coyotes and geese, all in the name of a fashion trend. More information on this event on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Also at UBC, Vegans of UBC is proud to present Do Something, the Importance of Activism, Talk and Teach-In on October the 29th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the AMS Student Nest UBC. It's all about the importance of being an active member in the vegan and animal rights communities and how you can get involved. The evening will consist of speaker Zoe Peled, who we've had on the show, followed by an activism workshop led by Chloe Repka. Zoe is an innovative leader on the board of Liberation BC and one of the co-organizers of Vancouver Chicken Save, and her recent additions to the community of animal rights activism in Vancouver include founding the Vancouver Vegan Resource Center and hosting the first installment of a pop-up in collaboration with the Little Mountain Shop. In other news, if you are attending the Vancouver Health Show this weekend, please check out the table for the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society and the Stop UBC Research Society to learn how you can help avoiding animal testing. And on Saturday, November 3rd, 2018, 5:30 to 9 p.m., Saturday, join the Cube of Truth. They are holding a peaceful static demonstration akin to an art performance. This demonstration operates in a structured manner that triggers curiosity and interest from the public. We attempt to lead the bystanders to a vegan conclusion through a combination of local standard practice animal exploitation footage shown on TVs and conversations with value-based sales approach. I've taken part in this. This is really effective. It's awesome to just even come and watch people make transformations right on the spot. I was out with a friend last night for dinner, and he was telling me that he was one of the activists holding one of the TVs with a mask over his face, and he watched a woman who was watching the screen he was holding, and she just started crying. And there was a very powerful conversation taking place between her and the famous vegan from Vancouver here, Erin Ireland. And basically, this woman decided to go vegan on the spot.
Amazing work. It's happening all over the world on November 3rd, too. So if you don't live in Vancouver, check out what your local chapter is doing.
If you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
And we have some news now.
We do. Really good news for whales and dolphins this week. Bill S-203, which has been stalled in the Senate for 3 years, has passed and will now move on to be voted on in the House of Commons. Bill S-203 would ban the captivity of whales and dolphins in Canada, as well as breeding in captivity and the sale of their sperm and embryos to places such as SeaWorld. Sadly, whales and dolphins currently in captivity at facilities like the Vancouver Aquarium or Ontario's Marineland are grandfathered in, and they can keep their profit-making captives, who in many cases were not rescued in the first place, but rather stolen from lives of freedom from their families. Marineland in Niagara Falls has had over 40 belugas in one tank, who are often aggressive with one another, with nowhere to escape to. And the Vancouver Aquarium keeps a dolphin named Helen, who was purchased from a Japanese aquarium and did not have a stranding number from her capture. The aquarium is disappointed about the outcome of Bill S-203, yet it should be noticed that they have no capability to rehabilitate a large cetacean with the space they have, and they have opposed the more humane option of using an ocean pen for rescue and rehabilitation, which was proposed by the Whale Sanctuary Project. It should also be noted that the Vancouver Aquarium has only rescued 4 cetaceans in 50 years, so activists see their resistance to Bill S-203 as more of a concern about their breeding relationship with other parks where they currently have belugas on loan, such as SeaWorld, for entertainment and breeding purposes. Every mother cetacean at the aquarium has watched their babies die, which is common for animals in captivity. So we need your help to encourage Bill S-203 to be passed. Please email your MPs and give your support.
For our feature interview today, we have international champion marathon runner Fiona Oakes on the show. But she's not just a champion in running, she is for mostly a champion for the animals, as she operates an animal sanctuary in the UK called Tower Hill Stables, where 450 rescued animals live. Fiona grabbed my attention in 2013 when she set out on a mission to run a marathon in every continent. She more than succeeded in that mission by breaking Guinness World Records and becoming the fastest female to complete a 7-continent marathon, plus the North Pole, and also in the shortest elapsed total time of 225 days. And now, just released last week on Vimeo, there is a fantastic documentary film about Fiona. It's called Running for Good, the Fiona Oakes documentary, and is executive produced by James Cromwell and directed by Keegan Coon, who made the films Cowspiracy and What the Health. Fiona is here today to tell us about her running, her veganism, and her true drive to achieve incredible feats of speed and human endurance, which are motivated by a deep desire to raise awareness for the plight of animals. Hello, Fiona, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi there.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time today to speak with us on the show. I know you have 450 animals to take care of, so I really appreciate this time. I want to start from the beginning. I understand that you became vegan at the age of 6. It always astonishes and amazes me when a person makes that choice and change as a child. Can you please tell us about your vegan journey and how that started for you at age 6?
Yeah, I mean, I went vegetarian at the age of 3 years old, totally self-inspired. My parents weren't vegan or vegetarian. I didn't come from sort of bohemian background. This was back in the 1970s, bear in mind. And I always say vegetarianism and veganism at that young age, it wasn't so much a decision to me as a reaction to me, if you get my drift. You don't want to harm those that you love. You live with your family, and I've always considered animals to be my extended family. So why, as much as I wouldn't want to harm my sister or my mum or my dad, I didn't want to harm those I loved, and that extended to animals. So it was a reaction against the violence and cruelty rather than a decision of me just polling up and saying to mum, hey mum, I want to go vegan. I didn't even know what the word vegan was at that time. I just knew I didn't want to buy into the animal cruelty. That was simply it. And I have to say always that I'm very, very fortunate. And I look back in hindsight and I see how fortunate I was to have a very supportive mother, particularly, who was willing to explore this with me rather than just say, oh, don't be so silly. Eat what you give and it's good for you. My mum was very, very acutely aware that there was something very, very different and she wanted to help me.
That's amazing. I wish more parents were like that. You're so lucky. So you started the Tower Hill Stables Sanctuary, I believe, in 1993. I know in the film you speak about how you've cared for hundreds of dogs over the years. I read on your website there's also 30 cats, but they can't live inside because of all the dogs. And I know you have hundreds of other residents. So how did this all start?
It started, actually, my journey in veganism is continually growing. It's just, I always say to people, I'm not an expert on anything, but I know that and I'm willing and wanting to learn. So when I was 6, I just didn't want to harm animals. The obvious thing was not buy into the cruelty. It was always a dream of me to nurture and care for animals. I never thought that that would become a reality. And indeed, when people ask me now, how do I start a sanctuary? How to become a world record running marathon runner? There isn't a set formula for doing it. It's what grabbing opportunities at the time and running with them. I met my partner back in 1992 and I was doing kind of rescue as much as I could at the time from a domestic environment. So I rented a house and I got small animals at the house and I got a few horses at various farms where they were grazing. The rescue came about that one of the horses had a very, very terrible accident. accident. I put him in a delivery yard. He was supposed to be in cared for whilst I was at work by the person in charge of the delivery yard. And indeed, they decided, rather than looking after them properly, they decided to let somebody go in there and shoot rabbits in the field where my horses were. Obviously, the gunshot, they frightened the horses, and one had impaled himself on a fence. We nearly lost him. He was at the vet for 13 weeks. And it was at that point that we were kind of pushed over the edge, and we decided we cannot continue on with this model. If we want to continue rescue, we've got to look at it a different way of doing it. And that's when we decided to go absolutely full on. That was the kind of thing that pushed us over the edge to make this enormous effort to transition from just simple domestic property into somewhere with any land. Very, very difficult. We live in the southeast of England. We were both working in London. Property prices are extremely high, and it was a massive challenge. And I still don't know how we reached it to buy what was, we were running the sanctuary from until very, very recently, Tower Hill Stables, where we got a few acres of land. And originally we started off with the idea that we would just rescue and care for the animals that we already had from Tower Hill. We didn't realise how much it was going to go and expand, how big it was going to get. We just needed to get the animals that we currently had at that time into a safe haven. And that's when we bought this place back in, 1993, we started with a rescue.
That's an amazing story. I've heard of many sanctuary owners of how they've started their rescues. It's always so inspiring to me, and I hope that our listeners will use this also as an example as how they might want to start a sanctuary. Now, I understand that many of the animals you've rescued come from desperate situations where that if you don't take them in, they are going to suffer and die. In the film, you say that you don't turn down any animals. Can you tell us about a few of the rescue stories about some of the animals who live at the sanctuary, and perhaps you can tell us about the rescue that you've been involved in just now today?
Yeah, I mean, people ask me, where do the animals come from? And it would be honestly easier to say where they don't come from, because they come from all sorts of sources. Occasionally, you might get a farmer ring me up and he say he's got an old cow that's spent, as they call them. He doesn't want to see her go to slaughter. Would I take her? We've had desperate pleas from members of the general public that happen to live near an abattoir. A pig has escaped off an abattoir lorry, run into their garden, and then like they've got the police, they've got the trading standards, they've got the abattoir people surrounding their house, and they don't want to let this pig go back to the slaughterhouse. Can we come over and help? And, you know, we've had some really, really tragic cases with animals that people don't want to talk about, taboo subjects. There I mentioned that we've had dogs that have been raped. You know, we've had really, really bad cases of animal abuse here. They come from all sorts of sources. People ask what sort of animals we have. We've got both domestic and ex-farmed. We've got cattle, sheep, pigs, goats, dogs and cats. We mainly take feral cats, because obviously we've got a lot of bull breed dogs and it's not fair to mix them. We've got a lot of barns here, so the feral cats live outside where they're very, very happy. We take the animals that we're geared up to take. I always say I never turn an animal away. That's not to say I just indiscriminately take animals. I always offer an olive branch to people. If they ask me to take an animal, I'll find out the circumstances. I'll offer to support them. I say, you know, if I can't take that animal personally, let's work together and find somewhere. Let's look at your circumstances. Let's find a way of accommodating that particular individual animal in the best way. The rescue I've just been involved in is actually, we were called in to help some what they call downer cows, which are cull cows, which are elderly cows that are off to slaughter if they aren't facilitated elsewhere. It was a call we had last night from our farm vet who said, I know of a couple of cows. Would you be interested if I can convince the farmer to let you have them? And we shot over there now and have just managed to get them from the jaws of the slaughterhouse people who were hovering, and we've just brought them home. And I actually thought I was going to be late for this interview, because I literally only arrived back here about 4 minutes ago after the bedding them down and getting them tucked up with a nice bale of hay and some good quality food, and they're perfectly happy. And along with them came 24 little rescued sheep, what they call spent ewes, and lambs that aren't making the weight, that we also managed to bring home to the sanctuary. we take animals from all sorts of sources, all desperate, all in need, all nowhere to go. People say to me, you know, do you rehome animals? Obviously, the farmed animals, nobody wants ex-farmed animals. The dogs, we don't rehome because I tend to take in the animals that no one else wants. So, for instance, in this country, particularly bull breeds aren't particularly popular in terms of the fact that people don't want them. They've got a very, very bad reputation in terms of being aggressive, which they definitely are not. And also elderly dogs, incontinent dogs, they're the ones that people don't really want to give a home to, and they're the ones that I will take in and care for. That's why I don't actually rehome, because I tend to let the people who specialize in the puppy rescue or the younger dog rescue or the special breed rescue do their part, and I fit that part of the puzzle that nobody else wants, which is the kind of animals that I tend to specialize in.
In the film, you say that you can relate to the suffering of other beings because you've suffered much yourself. As a child, you actually had serious knee problems. You went through 17 knee surgeries. You were told that you'd have to register as disabled, and now you have no kneecap. So moving on, you're an internationally known world marathon champion. And yeah, you're a long-distance runner. So tell us about running and how you came to find that and how you fit it into your very already busy life.
Running. Well, actually, I was told that I would never walk again properly, let alone run, which came as a great shock because I'd always been very, very athletic as a juvenile, as a young teen. It was a great, a very, very bad time for me. This was back in the 1980s. And I think people forget the time information sharing. The internet didn't exist. It wasn't so easy to just Google search things. People forget that if you wanted information, you had to go to a library. If you wanted to get in contact with someone, you had to have a telephone number or write them a letter. I mean, I know the young generation today think this is probably like Dickensian. It's not actually that long ago. For me, I was told I wouldn't walk again, and I kind of accepted that because I still do, even to this day, have great problems focusing on walking downstairs properly, believe it or not, one at a time. I tend to always want to hitch one leg down before the other because that's where I live most of my, you know, teenage years, having to do that. People ask me if I do a lot of weight training because I've got quite a big upper body muscle mass. It's probably the years I spent on crutches and on weight bearing that's given me that. I came to cycling purely because when we moved to the sanctuary, cycling I'd been doing before we moved to the sanctuary. I was quite a high achieving competitive cyclist. I took to cycling purely because it was low impact. It was actually kind of a static motion, low impact exercise that I could do. But when we moved to the sanctuary, it was not possible for me. Anybody knows about bike riding knows you've got to be on the bike a long time. It's all about 2-3 hour training sessions. Didn't have that kind of time availability to me. It's also quite expensive. And when we moved out here, I didn't have a penny piece. We still don't have a penny piece for ourselves. Everything we've got goes into the animal sanctuary. But after running this sanctuary for a few years, I kind of became aware of the fact that I was taking in animals and their life I was changing, definitely changing for the better. But the millions and millions of animals out there that are just passing through slaughterhouses and abattoirs and living in horrendous situations, being exploited on a daily basis, I wasn't actually having any impact on them. And the only way I could do that, well, the only way I could actually achieve something was kind of for them, was to actually give myself a platform for which to speak out for them. Very, very frustrating that veganism has always, even to this day, it's changing on a daily basis, certainly in the UK. There is a lot of negativity, a lot of misconceptions, a lot of myths surrounding veganism. People think that you can't be strong, unhealthy on a plant-based diet. And certainly back in the 80s and 90s, that was very much the case. People weren't even familiar with the word vegan. They thought it was some kind of, I don't know, weird sort of, I don't know what people, I mean, when I've said I'm vegan, they just look at me and think it's obviously me shortening the term vegetarian. So anyway, I wanted to do something to speak out for those that are really, really abused. And after caring for them a long time, like, you know, the cattle, the sheep and the pigs, it became more and more important to me. But it's kind of, what do I do that's cheap, it's time flexible, can do it on your own, it's easy, and you can just literally slip out for an hour or two and do it. And running came to mind purely because of Paula Radcliffe in the UK. Paula Radcliffe was making a really, really great name for herself in the marathon event, something which probably wouldn't have exploded in the way it has in this country if she hadn't have done this. And I thought, well, she's kind of built a platform. Everyone in the UK was talking about marathons and this extreme event that this British woman was doing well in. And I thought, well, she's creating a kind of forum of publicity. Perhaps I could kind of jump on the bandwagon if I could run and do a marathon. And in it, I just thought, if I could complete a marathon, it proves positive that this extremely difficult event that people are saying is so challenging and it's the hardest event in the athletics calendar, if I could do that as a vegan lady and a long-term vegan lady, it kind of puts to bed that myth that you can't do extreme endurance events on a plant-based diet. And that's kind of when I thought, well, I know I was told I couldn't run back when I was a teenager, but you know, I'm pretty fit, I'm pretty strong. Perhaps if I started to try and jog, do a bit of Keep Fit, do a 10k, see what I can do. And that's how it all kind of developed. There wasn't some sort of great grand plan to anything that I've ever done. But after a while, I kind of thought to myself, okay, the better I can get at this event, the better I can promote what I believe in through doing this event. It did take quite a while for me to make the decision, am I going to invest this amount of time that it's obviously going to take to be very accomplished at this discipline? Is it worth it? And I kind of came to the kind of conclusion it was, because A, I can promote, not only promote veganism, but if you do well in a race, people then say to you, well, what do you do for a living? And I don't actually run the sanctuary for a living, but I can mention the sanctuary. So it's kind of free advertising for the work I do with rescue. So it's kind of a double pronged bonus that I thought, you know, the better I can do, the more publicity I'll generate for both kind of angles of animal activism. And that's kind of where I've come from with it. I mean, back in 2004, I was achieving the kind of results that get you onto the elite starts of the biggest races in the world, like London and Berlin and Amsterdam. And that's when we decided to form what I think is probably one of the greatest and most monumental forms of accidental activism that there has ever been for a plant-based diet. And that's when we started Vegan Runners in the UK, which now has a total membership of over 17,000 people who get out there every Saturday and Sunday and any other day they can and promote veganism, basically by having the word vegan written on their club vest. And it was that we realised that, you know, if I want to run on the elite start in the London Marathon, you've got to be in an affiliated running club. At the time, I was running for Vegetarian Cycling and Athletics Club because that was affiliated. But another member of that club said to me, you know, hey, Fiona, you're going to be on the front row in London. You know, you're going to get a lot of publicity. You're going to attract a lot of attention. Perhaps now is the time that we think about, for you know, affiliating a strictly dedicated vegan running club. And that's what we did. We started Vegan Runners back in 2004, and it's proved massively popular, getting people from around the world wanting to join, wanting to start their own affiliate groups of the club, purely to go out there to kind of, I won't say a captive audience, but a naturally interested in audience in performance and how other people achieve optimum performance. So if you're out there and you're winning a race and you've got vegan runners splattered all over your vest, people come to you and ask for information. And that's basically what my life's been about, just always trying to kind of find a way of slipping my plant-based living into what I do. So, I mean, I'm also a firefighter. I work for the Rattan Fire Service. When I joined the fire brigade back in 2001, I was not only the only female in the regional division, but I was obviously the only vegan. And it's always for me about asking people to address the topic and make them aware of the topic of veganism. That's what I do. I'm not a particularly confrontational person. That doesn't work for me. I would rather lead by example and kind of introduce what I believe into the conversation in a way that people are actually interested and they come to you and are curious. That's the way I work, and that's the way I work with my life.
I love that you're doing this as a platform for speaking for the animals. The film Running for Good follows your story in running the Marathon des Sables in the deserts of North Africa. This race is the equivalent of 6 marathons back to back. Runners have died on this course before, and it's known as the toughest foot race on earth. I watched the film a few days ago, Fiona. I was held on the edge of my seat the whole time. Seeing what you and the other runners went through was an outstanding experience for me just to watch. You were literally running through the sand dunes in most of the race. You also had to run down mountains of rocks and up mountains of rocks. The heat goes up to 50 degrees Celsius in the daytime. And to top it off, your shoes broke and you had to tape them up with gaffer tape in order to finish the race. So some people might wonder what would drive a person to torture themselves with one of the most difficult human-made physical challenges on the earth. You know, running one marathon is, it's quite common. People do that. But this was something just unimaginable to most people. I think most people would say it would just be personal drive to push one's body and mind to the limits. That's why they would do it. But why did you put yourself through this race, and what drives you to do grueling marathons at all, as you have?
To me, it's always about, I always say to people, I'm not particularly a runner. I enjoy the fact and appreciate the fact that I can run, but I'm only out there with a reason to be running. And that's not just to win a race or to win a prize or get a time. I'm out there for a specific reason, which is to promote in a positive and proactive way what I believe in, what my life is all about. So raising the bar all the time on the challenges is very important to me, to show that anything can be done. And I think it was a natural progression going into Marathon des Sables. I'd had a fairly successful road running career, very, very strategic in my marathon running. My running has always been, I don't enter a lot of races. I am very, very time and financially constricted in that I'm needed at the sanctuary. I get up at 3:30 every morning and I care for the animals, and the running has to be fitted in around that. I am I'm the most amateur of amateur runners, boxing kind of in a professional world when I actually go to a race start. And it's a really, really weird juxtaposition. I train alone. I have no coach. The reason I have no coach is that when I approach people, when I was getting better times and I approach people for help back in the early noughties, a lot of coaches said, yeah, we would be interested in helping you, but for one thing, the diet. You're not going to succeed on a plant-based diet. You're going to go away and you're going to negate the input that we're giving you. So we're not going to waste our time with it. And I said, well, the way I live my life, the ethical stance I take is not negotiable. That is the whole reason I'm out there. So I've kind of gone it alone. So after a relatively successful road running career, I only ever used to focus on 2 big races a year. I used to go for the biggest marathons in the world and try and get there amongst the best runners in the world and place. After that, I thought, well, I've achieved all I can. I've run my PB 2:38. I'm not going to get any quicker than that. I either give up or I kind of channel and focus somewhere else. So obviously then the next progression was pick a tier down from that and go and win marathons. Did that, took that course for a few years. And I thought, well, is this getting me the publicity I want? For sure it was getting me the publicity, but back in sort of like 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. It was getting me publicity in terms of the fact for the sanctuary, people were very, very aware of that softer element of what I do. Oh, this woman does this to help rescued animals. But they wouldn't address the vegan issue. I've always found it very, very difficult until recently to get the press and the media to take on board the vegan issue. They just didn't want to touch it. And even today, I think it's only with the event of social media and that kind of, the mainstream media cannot afford to ignore veganism anymore, because actually it's a phenomenon in itself on social media. But up until this point, I kind of thought, I'm not achieving what I want to for the actual cause I want to be out there, which is to help make the general public aware of the suffering of the animals in animal agriculture and the industries related to that. So I kind of ran fast marathons, and then people always joke, and I say one of my friends suggested to me, you know, why don't you do the toughest foot race on the planet? That's going to prove definitively that a vegan can do anything. You can carry a backpack across a desert, survive for a week, Bearing in mind, I'm doing it ethically vegan. So at the time, back in 2012, when I first did that race, you literally couldn't buy the synthetic sleeping bags. You couldn't buy the bagged meals, you know, the hydrated meals. So I was literally carrying a huge pack, probably getting up to a quarter of my body weight across the desert, you know, just to prove that I could do it as an ethical vegan. The first time I did it back in 2012, unfortunately, the week before I went out there, I broke two toes. So I was actually faced with the challenge of going out to the marathon, the Sable, the toughest foot race on the planet, with two fractured toes. I did the race, I finished it, but I decided that the next year I would like to go back and do it again and see if I could run it without having two broken toes, hopefully. But in the meantime, that's when the world record attempt came up. Somebody, you know, one of my other friends said, you know, you've done the toughest foot race on the planet. Why don't you do the polar marathons, North Pole and Antarctic ice marathon? I kind of thought, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And it did at the time, till I actually arrived at the North Pole and realized I got to run a marathon there. But I've always kind of, I don't know, tried to modify my goals and put the bar one step higher, see if I'm creating and achieving. And if I'm not, I'll leave it alone and go and do something else. Bearing in mind that for me, I've always got that kind of dilemma. I've got 450-ish animals to look after. I either stop doing the running if it's not being productive, rather than just keep going and keep going and not kind of changing what I'm doing, I just come back and look after the animals. So I always want to challenge myself to prove, I suppose, definitively that I can do it. And, you know, indeed, Keegan asked, he said, you know, I would love to film you doing one of these challenges. Obviously, I can't go back to the North Pole. I can't go back to break the world records that I broke in 2013 and again in 2014. Mm-hmm. What race would you say is a great one to illustrate how tough a vegan person can be? And I said, it's definitely Marathon des Sables, because it's just got everything and it's really, really hard. And that's why I went out there in 2017 and Keegan filmed me doing that race. Since that, I've gone on and broken another world record on the road. And I've just got back from the Atacama Desert, which I'm thrilled with. Another one of these stage races where I won the last stage, won my age group, and I did it dressed as a cow. Because I'm always looking at ways of promoting veganism in a kind of softly, softly way. And people say to me, why did you go out there dressed as a cow? And that's precisely the reason, so that you would ask me why I did it. And then I can kind of highlight the plight of cattle in the dairy industry. Something which, in defense of a lot of people, they just simply are not aware of. A lot of people who are vegetarian think that they're not eating the flesh of an animal, therefore they are not being cruel. But the dairy industry is one of the most cruel and exploitative industries you can possibly imagine, and a lot of people just simply are not aware of it. So I want to kind of always just make a statement through what I'm through my actions, and then introduce conversation. That's why I keep changing around what I'm doing. I'm a road runner, predominantly a road runner, but I can turn my hand to kind of these off-road and more extreme events. I'll do whatever I've got to do to just promote and highlight what I believe in a positive way.
Well, thank you for doing that. I want to talk a little bit about food, because food is fuel, especially for an endurance athlete. So what can you tell us about what you like to eat and how food fuels your body to do everything that you're able to do?
Well, food is probably one of the most important parts of my life, obviously. But for me, it's slightly different in that it's not my own food bothered about most of the time. It's the food that I've got for the animals, because with 450 mouths to feed, mine's probably the one that I think of last. And I do have a very, very strange way of living. It's not unique. I actually thought it was, and I used to be ashamed and to tell people, but it's not unique, and I found that out as I've gone along with my running. What I enjoy, I eat very basic. I eat seasonal foods. My parents, I live with my parents. They moved in with us a few years ago to help at the sanctuary. Dad has an allotment, a vegetable patch. He grows a lot of the vegetables that I eat. So it's whole food, pulses, nuts, fruit, fresh foods. Nothing particularly, no real secrets to what I have. Very basic, and I only eat one meal a day. I don't actually supplement my diet with anything. I don't have some sort of, you know, secret shakes that I make myself, or smoothies or drinks. I just enjoy what is available, the food that is available to me at any given time. And I always think to myself, truly, honestly, I think I'm blessed to live in a country where I don't have to worry about where the next meal is coming from. So what that next meal is, as long as it's plant-based, really doesn't fuss me too much. I don't focus. My mum cooks the food, and a lot of the food, we're on a donation program from supermarkets, which donate fruit and veg for the pigs. And very often I'll use some of that in my diet. Mum makes soups. I can't give anybody any secrets. I mean, people say, what do you take to the desert when you're running across the desert for a week? And I just took a few flapjack bars, a couple of expedition meals, and got on with it because I'm doing it for the animals. I really have, I suppose, lost. I'm not too bothered about myself and what I'm doing. I'm only bothered about what I'm creating and achieving for them. So it is a very, very basic diet. And I think, you know, bear in mind, I went vegan when I was 6 years old. That was back in the 1970s. There weren't the products available at the time. You couldn't buy, I mean, you could buy a very, very basic, like, soya powder milk drink that you made up. And the rest of the meals had to be created from scratch. So I suppose my mum over the years has devised ways of making all these weird and wonderful meals that I eat. And it's very, very basic, just beans. And, you know, I'm not exactly a freegan, but I don't indulge myself particularly. And even now I don't buy the ice creams. I don't buy the soya yogurts because I simply can't afford them. I need everything for the animals. All our money always has gone to the animals, and that's the way I would rather it be than me just focusing on myself and indulging myself. And that's the truth. I've wondered what to say to people when they ask me about my diet, and I have to be honest, and that is the honest truth for me. Probably a lot of people say, for a sports person, if I want to call myself an athlete, and I'm always reluctant to do that, your head's got to be right as well as your body. And for me, that's very, very important, that when I stand on any start line, the most important thing to me is know that no animal or other being, I hope, has suffered for the performance that I am about to deliver. It's a very honest performance based on kind of grit and graft that I've put in, effort that I've put in. I've not taken from anything or anyone to do that. And that's really, really the most important thing to me.
So I'm wondering, given the food that you eat, very simple, plant-based, whole foods, what can you say about how that might achieve better recovery? And because I know athletes are very interested in fast recovery so that they can perform faster. Do you have something to say on that?
Yeah, I mean, people, I mean, it's difficult because I haven't got really a before and after to compare to. I know a lot of people that I have encouraged to go vegan. And in fact, there's a very one lady that's featured in the film, Elizabeth Barnes. She's actually won the Marathon des Sables a couple of times, and she actually has now gone plant-based. And she said one of the most remarkable things is her recovery rate, the speed of which she can recover to get out there and train more training. That's and I have obviously a testament to that. Has to be the results that I've achieved are based on the training I have done, and I have worked very, very hard for those results. I train 9 times a week, 3 speed sessions, 3 recovery runs, a hill session, a long run, and a midweek longer run. And I can only say that over the career that I've had, I've never had an injury that's kept me out of my training. I recover extremely quickly. I mean, I'm literally bouncing back. I mean, I got back from the Atacama Desert after doing a week-long stage race a week last Monday. I arrived home, and I'm already planning to go to Antarctica and do the same thing next month, a week-long stage race in Antarctica. The versatility, the consistency, and the longevity of my career, I look back on now, and I think that has to be the biggest testament to the recovery rate that I have. And that the only defining factor, it has to be my plant-based diet. Also, and my motivation to continue. So I've got kind of a body that will allow me to do it and a mind that pushes me to do it. So I can't really offer anything else, but I keep, and I can switch between the two. I can go out and I can run, you know, some 3-hour marathons dressed as a cow if I want to. I can run like 100 kilometers, or I can do the desert races. And it's quite, you know, quite easy for me to do that. And also I live a very, very hectic lifestyle. I, you know, as I say, I do get up at 3:30 in the morning. I do still do most of the hands-on work at the sanctuary myself. So I'll be unloading hay, I'll be unloading tons and tons of animal feed. And this is on a daily, monthly, yearly basis. My recovery is quite outstanding. And also when I've been to the only time that I've recently had to attend doctor's surgery is to get certificates to be able to go and do these races. You know, they want to make sure that when you turn up, you're actually semi-fit to actually do it. So I have to go and get ECGs for the marathon de Sable. I've got a resting pulse of 34 beats a minute. One doctor actually flagged up with that and said, it's very, very low. I would like you to see a cardiologist. And the cardiologist I actually went to did specialisation and research work at Cambridge University. And he asked me to join a programme there because he thought it was outstanding with the amount of recovery, the quickness, the speed of my recovery and the longevity and the years I've been doing it without injury. I've been to other doctors who've actually doubted the fact that I could possibly do what I do without a kneecap. And I actually went to one doctor. I was having a little bit of trouble with my right knee. It was quite painful to run the road. And I thought I'd better get it checked out before I start another training program for another marathon. And he actually was so shocked. He actually said, I'm going to have to do an ultrasound on your knee to make sure that you haven't got a kneecap. I said, I can't believe you can do what you do without it. And sure enough, he did the ultrasound and said, I am absolutely astounded by what you can do physically on your plant-based diet or you know, just for anyone to be able to do what you can do. It's genetic. It shouldn't really be possible. When I had the surgery on my knee, I was told that I would never be able to run downhill properly. And indeed, I do find it very, very difficult, but I always can find a way around it. And as I say, the only thing I can put it down to is the way I live my life. I stand by my principles. I have a great belief, and that is the most important thing in my life, the reason that I'm out there running especially, and the reason I'm out there. It's very easy to make yourself suffer and push yourself that bit harder when you know you're doing it kind of life and death. I'm not doing it for my life and death, but I am doing it hopefully to influence in some way others to consider the life and death of animals.
Well, you stood by your principles when you were asked by the BBC to come on television. You speak about this in the film. After, in your great marathoning achievements, they took notice of you. They asked to have you on their television network to tell your story. I believe this was just after you had won the North Pole Marathon and also broke the course record. In the film, you explain that you were instructed by the television people not to say that you are vegan, which I personally think would be ridiculous in today's mainstream media. This was only 5 years ago. And anyways, you did speak your truth. You did say why you run for the animals, and you did say that you're vegan. I'm wondering if you can speak on the fear of conflicts between media and the meat and dairy advertisers, and maybe how that's changing now, though, with veganism booming in the UK these days, and 7% of British citizens are now identifying as vegan.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I think that's a really, really good point. I mean, you're talking about this was only 2013. That was the absolute truth. I was invited up to Salford to speak to open and close BBC breakfast, but not to mention the fact that I was plant-based. I did find a way of kind of mentioning it, but there was no uptake on it at the time.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it was like just went dead, you know, completely dead. But it is changing, and it's changing on a daily basis almost. And one kind of example of that is last week I was nominated for quite a big global award. A major company in the UK, Amplifon, were looking for brave Britons, people who'd gone that extra mile for charity. And I was actually nominated to go up to this big award ceremony in London at Pall Mall. And it never entered my head that I could possibly win that award category. Because, to be truthful, I was doing it for animals. And in my experience, people charities have always kind of took precedence over animal charities in the UK, but certainly not somebody who is kind of not just stroking cats and dogs kind of animals. I'm doing it for a reason. I am plant-based. I'm a vegan. athlete who runs an animal sanctuary. I didn't think it was possible. And I was absolutely poleaxed when the winner was announced, and it was me. And it it was incredible. And I went up to collect my award. I was completely in tears because I thought, this is the recognition, not for me, that I've always craved. I do not crave any recognition for me, but for the animals and for what I believe in, and not just for kind of animals that people categorize as okay, like cats and dogs and possibly horses, for all animals everywhere. And I was absolutely and utterly stunned. And it kind of was that, I walked out of the award, and it was that kind of rubber stamp. Times really are changing. This isn't just a fad. This isn't just a trend. People are opening their hearts and minds to the suffering of others. And they are not just accepting, but embracing people like myself who speak out. And it was a really emotional time for me, not just to win the award, but it's that recognition and that realization that things are definitely changing and people are becoming aware. A lot of people now are saying, you know, I've always done what I've done for the animals. I started off being vegan for the animals, but I'm constantly growing. I think you need to grow and you need to learn and you need to expand your horizons and explore what you're actually thinking. And for me, I've realized now how much it impacts veganism. No, it doesn't just impact on the animals, human health, your own health, the environment, and the future. And these things are all becoming much, much, much more important to me over the years. So it's just a win-win. To me, veganism is just a win-win situation on whatever level you choose to look at it. But others are becoming aware of that. And that's monumental for me personally, having been vegan for well over 40 years. It's just fantastic.
Wonderful work. Congratulations on that award. So I understand that it takes $17,000 Canadian, that's £10,000 in UK money, to run the sanctuary every month. There are a variety of ways listed on your website how people can help. You have an Amazon wish list. People can buy food for the animals or adopt animals and more. Can you tell us about some of the best ways that our listeners can support the Tower Hill Stable Animal Sanctuary and the rescue work that you do?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's always very difficult because obviously I don't ask for anybody's money personally. I mean, I can tell people that we are 100% invested financially, physically, emotionally, spiritually in this sanctuary. Every penny of our own goes into it. We take nothing out for ourselves. Obviously, that's just a given. Finance is always very important because I do this for the love of the animals, but the vets, the feed merchant, the farriers, they don't. They want paying. So in essence, we need funds to pay them. We take nothing of that for ourselves. They can support through the wish list, just by spreading the word, just by supporting, by fundraising, just by getting in touch. People come up with some really innovative ways of, you know, helping. Even if they're abroad, they might, you know, want to do a sponsored run or anything like that. I mean, you know, the best way is just to write to us and say what your situation is and how you'd like to get involved. If you're in the UK, I mean, people do this, the bread run, what we call the bread run, where every day somebody has to drive over to the supermarket, which donates the fruit and veg and bread, and collect it, bring it back to the sanctuary and unwrap it. And that's a really, really good way of supporting the animals, because for the pigs love it. We've got 121 pigs at the moment, and they love to, you know, get fresh vegetables and fresh fruit and fresh bread rather than eating the pig nuts. But it just depends where you are. But I suppose in essence the main thing that we need is funds, because that's what everyone that we have to deal with wants from us, and that's what keeps the place going. We have to be able to fund it, but there's lots of ways of generating the funds, and people can buy stuff off, you know, like you say, off the wish list, or they can get involved in coming over in volunteer groups. We've just actually moved. We've expanded the sanctuary. We bought a bigger place. We've still got the current site, but we've got that place as well running in conjunction. So we're doing like Airbnb. So if anybody is from abroad and they want a place to stay over in the UK that's not too far from London, get in touch. We've got two rooms there that are available on Airbnb, so you can kind of be relatively close to London and spend time with the animals. So there's a whole host of ways that people can kind of get involved, or just write in support, because it's really, really inspiring for me to hear stories from people around the world. I mean, after the film has been released, I've got people writing from just about every corner of the planet, you know, just saying that, you know, I've helped them, I've inspired them, they've shown it to their parents. You know, I've got a girl in Kazakhstan who said that her mother didn't want to let her go vegan, and now she's seen the film and she's happier to let her go plant-based. So those stories inspire me, drive me to think I am actually making a difference, because it is kind of hard to walk in my shoes sometimes, even when they're not broken and in the desert. So you know, or indeed actually they could just buy a pair of the lovely Will shoes, because after the film and my shoes fell to pieces and people say, well, why did you wear them? And I only wore them because I have trialed them in other races beforehand and they've worked. But obviously this, the particular Marathon de Sable that Keegan filmed me in, there was an awful lot of rocky climbing and they just did disintegrate. So after that, a vegan shoe company called Will's Vegan Shoes said, you know, we want to design for you a specific brand of vegan running shoe, totally ethically sourced and really man enough for the job of going out there into these desert races. And so people can buy one of those via Will's Vegan Shoe website. And indeed, when I went out to the Atacama race, that was also another very, very rocky race. And people who had got trail shoes said, oh, my shoes are falling to pieces. And I said, well, go and buy yourself a pair of these because mine are doing fine. So I've got no blisters and I've got like massive, like great tire treads on my soles after I came back from that race. So yeah, they can do that if they like. But you know, there's a whole host of ways. And if anybody's got any ideas or interest or questions, best thing is just contact us and we can point them in the right direction for their circumstances and what they feel comfortable with.
Thank you so much. One final question. Any last words that you would like to leave our listeners with for World Vegan Day, which is coming up soon on November 1st?
Yeah, I think my most important message is, obviously, I've lived my life the way I've lived my life. And I'm not telling everyone that's, you know, you've got to go out and break world records and marathons and whatever. The most effective way you can help the animals by the choices you make on a daily basis on your plate. And every person who's vegan, vegan curious, go out there and promote the vegan message. That's fantastic. All we must stay united to help the animals. That's the most important thing. And it's so inspiring to know that the vegan community is growing so rapidly. Everyone is equally important. And, you know, I certainly don't want to be on a pedestal. I've done nothing special. And every listener out there is probably capable and of doing far more than I have, and probably is doing far more than I have, just in the daily walk of life, you know, their job, introducing veganism in a positive way and showing people that, you know, this is the true alternative for the future of the planet. This is the only way forward. And just to thank people for being out there and listening and going out there and doing what they can do for the animals and for the environment. That's amazing. I'm just so pleased to be born and to be living right now when this is really, really happening.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Fiona, for World Vegan Day. We've been speaking with international marathon champion and animal rescuer Fiona Oakes. A documentary film about Fiona called Running for Good has just come out on Vimeo.com, and I highly recommend going there to watch it. It's an amazing movie.
You can also visit the film's website at runningforgoodfilm.com.
Also, please go to Fiona's Animal Sanctuary website at towerhillstables.com, where you can find out more about the sanctuary and make a donation to help the animals. Thank you for being on the show today, Fiona. Thank you for everything you do, and I wish you a happy World Vegan Day.
Thank you for having me, and happy World Vegan Day to you and all your listeners too.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. You can listen to the extended version of this interview with Fiona Oakes later today at animalvoices.org and on iTunes. Please join us on our show next Friday, November 2nd. I will be hosting, and I think I might have to do a show about Canada Goose and fur, since there is so much out on the streets right now. Yes. This show is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. Remember, we are amidst the fall member drive here at Vancouver Co-op Radio, so if you can, please make a donation to support the Animal Voices show and to keep us on the air. You can do so by calling 604-684-684. 8494 or by going to coopradio.org and clicking on donate. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. To end the show today, we're playing music from the closing credits of the film Running for Good, composed by Jason Camiolo. Remember to watch the film at runningforgoodfilm.com. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.